Helium Talk, ein Kunstpodcast von Melvin Wiebeke und Jörg Heikhaus. Special Edition, Landpartie.
What was your first thought when you got a call from me inviting you to do an art exhibition in a tiny little village in the remote countryside of northern Germany?
I've known you for a bit of time now. So when you call and say there's an exhibition at a small town in Germany, for me it was just like, of course, I would love to be in it. I know you could get something totally awesome out of that. So I was stoked. I was looking forward to it, and I actually think we were talking about something different when you called. And you had this side thing like, oh yeah, I'm thinking about making this. And I've been down here before visiting you at the house on the countryside, so I know how beautiful it is down here.
You're also not living too far away, right?
Of course. It's easy for me to get down here.
Yeah.
It's not the yeah.
But how is it being an artist in, you pronounce the city now properly, Oppenrade, they say in Germany, Oppenrohr.
Yeah, Oppenrohr.
Oppenrohr.
How it is?
Yeah.
It's quiet.
Yeah.
I've been working in Copenhagen with my art for like most of my adult life, and moving down in the most south of Denmark, it works good. It's a lot of different. It's really different
to working in a large city like Copenhagen.
Yeah, you know, the whole you don't have the same network. It's not there's not really a scene down there. But the people down there is very curious and have taken me in a really cool way. So I'm starting. We moved back 5 years ago, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, to Oppenrohr, and I actually think I'm starting to figure it out how to use my creative life down there.
Yeah, and you also have a gallery in
Horsens.
In Horsens. So it's not that far away, right? Horsens,
no,
it's an hour away from you.
Yeah, I think that's an hour from Oppenrohr to Horsens. Yeah, I've been working with that gallery for a lot of time, many years now. And is the gallery's main representing me in Denmark. I had galleries in Copenhagen before, but it's a good gallery. He's a great guy, and it was actually, it was nice moving closer to that gallery also.
Yeah, I met him once in Hamburg on
the
adorable art fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working hard.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing in the gallery business that some people looking at it from the outside often misunderstand, that it always looks easy and it looks beautiful. Because it's like the business of making everything look beautiful and successful, and in its core, it's brutal work, you know. And you know, also people get, I mean, if you're not an artist and if you're not in this gallery scene, you probably just read about large exhibitions and Art Basel, and then of course everything is insane, or Venice Biennale or something. But these are just the top highlights, you know. It's not the grassroots. It's not where actually people try to live from their art and from artists that they believe in and that are really good but don't have the market to show at the Venice Biennale or at Art Basel, for example. And then it's tough work. And he's been doing it for quite some time, right?
Yeah, he's been a gallerist for 15 years now. Yeah. He started from scratch. Like, got a room, knew some artist, and then just built it up, and it's always like, it's been true. like he got the arts he loves. And I remember for me, I'd had my first gallery exhibition around, I think I was 21 or something. And was not that informed about how much work it was to be a gallerist. And working with a lot of different gallerists, like seeing, it's a lot, the thing with gallerist and artist relationship is that it's very important, the trust against. If you can really feel that your gallerist is like, she sincerely love your work and is willing to put a lot of hours in. I know some people are talking about, yeah, they're getting a share and all that about the money thing, but the thing is that they're working actually as hard. Lots of the gallerists.
Yeah, I think
you know, you've been working in that business.
There's black sheep everywhere, but
yeah, but I have the they have me the respect totally.
Yeah,
the gallerists. But it's important. It's extremely important that it's a co-work.
Yeah, over the course of time that I've been doing these podcasts, Helium Talk. I mean, I just realized that the first podcast, Helium Talk, I produced in 2018. It was basically pre the big art podcast time. Podcasting was just, it wasn't the beginning, but it was just growing, There were not many art podcasts. And I've spoken to a lot of artists and also gallerists, and this trust issue is core to the relationship between gallerists and artists. But it's also very fragile. So, like, what do you do as an artist when you get that better offer?
Yeah.
Or what do you do as a gallerist when you don't sell the work and have to try to maybe, sort of correct your business decision to showing this person? And then at these crossroads, that's where conflict begins. Mm-hmm. And then you have to see that every player is totally wrong word, but it's we're both not English, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Everyone in this construct is basically a little company. Everybody has to see where you stand at the end of the month and what is beneficial for me and so. I think if you have a good relationship with the gallery as an artist, and you can talk about everything, like even call and say, well, I'm not feeling this. It's better than just waiting and checking out and watching. And I think with the small galleries, you still have the advantage that there is this personal direct connection. I mean, you've probably read the story about Pace Gallery, who just decided business is not good, being the largest gallery in the world, basically. Yeah. So we just throw out 50 of our staff and also 50 artists.
Yeah.
And in the press statement, they also named these artists, knowing exactly what that means for the careers of these artists. I mean, they're all top artists, so they don't really have to worry about it. But that would be something like if you as a gallery say, if like your gallerist says, well, I'm not working with Rasmus anymore because I don't sell his work. It's shit. I love the work, but I mean, I don't know, no other gallery would say, oh, Rasmus Rinhag, I really need to show you, because it's a financial construct. So yeah, trust.
Yeah, that is so weird that the thing you're mentioning about it, you totally forget sometimes that you are your own business.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, you're co-workers in some way, but you're like, you're in a need of each other. Like you're making, I have a service, I'm making a product, he wants to sell it or her. And all that should work out. But for me, the gallerist I'm working, I'm actually, normally, a lot of artists shop around a lot of different galleries, and that's fair. That's the way it works. But I'm reached a point, and I'm feeling lucky also that I have two main galleries now that I've been working for quite a long time, and I'm feeling pretty secure around our the way we work together, but also the thing that we are being honest. mm-hmm. around what is going on.
Yeah.
I love when a gallerist is like looking at my work and say, "Hey, cool! I love the way you were. I love the whole style you're in right now, but that one doesn't work."
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely important, because or else you're just building up something that will only be evaluated when you're standing there and it's not selling. So it's not about sale, of course it's not, but that's the whole point if you have a gallery where it's not all about sale. I know we need to make some money so we can buy new materials and mm-hmm. And also pay the rent for the studio and everything, but you have to see it as a long-term investment. The friendship and the way a young artist, if it is a young artist or something, need to develop.
Yeah.
And a good gallerist is able to see that.
Yeah, I remember the first time I had a gallery that was showing me, I mean, I've had galleries before that were showing me, but this gallery wanted to make a solo exhibition, but more like, you know, just show my work. It's not like you have the space and you do whatever you want. And this... this guy came when I delivered the work, and I said, "Okay, let's go." And he said, "Well, you can go to the pub down the road and drink some beers. I'm going to do the installing, and I don't want you here." And first, I was like, "That's, you know, I cannot leave him alone with the stuff," because actually we didn't know each other very well. He knew my work, but then I relaxed and I said, "Okay, fine. I probably did go down to that pub." And when I came back the next morning, he hung my work in a different way to what I would have done. But he knew his space. I realized he knew his space. He knew his customers, the people that came. The opening was super crowded and everybody was very happy. And I think there were some works that I wanted to show that he just put in the back, yeah. You know, maybe somebody's really interested. Oh, wow, that's key work. So I liked the experiences and helped me to let loose a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes I cannot, but you know, in that case, it was pretty good to do this.
I always had the respect around, I've learned through the years, like trusting the curation of the galleries, because I have always these ideas and things. But the thing is, when people walks in, it's the thing you say about into their room. But mostly the artworks I love the most are made. I think mm-hmm. this is the best thing you ever made. I'm looking so much forward to see them. That's almost likely the one who doesn't get sold. And sometimes I have that art fair thing, calling it the art fair disease for artists, that they're coming with these great works, and as you mentioned, like taking that work, oh yeah, that's fine, putting in the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have these works around, because you just seem different, and that's a great thing if you have a good way of working together, that the gallerist actually sees it through his eyes and sees why he thinks it's good. Because we're living in it every day as artists.
Yeah.
We're walking around in the studio looking at our work all
the
time.
Yeah, you have no distance work. Sometimes it's difficult, yeah. I knew it before, but you know, when we were just walking through our garden here, big vegetable garden.
Yeah. The carrots and tomatoes.
You mentioned again to me that you are actually a trained chef.
Yeah.
So how did you get from being somebody who does something really useful?
That's right.
It's a lot of irony. But how did you get from being a chef to being an artist?
I'm like everybody. All artists say that, like, the thing that I've been drawing all my life and always loved artists and never what is called. Became an adult and mm-hmm. all that, but I loved the whole kitchen thing, the whole way it worked, the structure. I needed that at that time, and then I figured I was good at it. So built a lot of things up around that, but I still, even though I had that, I still kept on drawing and painting. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Copenhagen from Aarhus. And around after the first year over there, I was like trying to pursue the drawing thing, starting graphic school, and pretty fast a gallery in North Denmark saw my stuff.
What was that?
Called Galerie Provence. Mm-hmm. And then it actually took, it went pretty fast from there. I think I was around 20 years. So it was not a coincidence, because you have to make work to get seen. But for me, it was, I was not working for it to become like professional artist. Mm-hmm. It was, in that way, it was a coincidence that somebody walked past the windows to my studio and looked in and said, this is actually pretty exciting. It was, or whatever it's called. And it just, that just took shape from there.
Probably Copenhagen is also a good a good city to make connections to other artists. And I think we met through a network of people. I think I think we met for Rune Christensen, right?
Yeah.
That was, yeah.
Copenhagen is the capital of Denmark. One of the smallest cities in there.
I worked there for almost half a year once. I know Copenhagen quite well. Yeah.
It's a great place. I love Copenhagen.
Absolutely.
But of course the art scene is small, and there's actually a lot of galleries, a lot of high end galleries. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool exhibition places, project rooms. The art academy is great there, and a lot of young people. But it is. It's easier to network when you all come at the same place, when the city is not fragmented in the same way as you go to bigger cities. So for me, moving to Copenhagen, it went really fast, like getting people, getting to know people, and Rune, our who introduced me to the Helium Cowboy. Came back from traveled the world, and needed a place to stay. And he knew the gallerist, and he said, "Hey, I need a place to do some artwork." And I said, "Hey, come back and come down at my studio." And that's suddenly everything just at the Helium. And
Rune also moved back from Copenhagen to his hometown of Horsens.
Yeah,
so basically practically neighbors now.
If you live in the US or something.
but I think it's there's probably a point in the career of an artist where you don't need have the need for this networking in the big city, and maybe then it's much better to find a space where you can just be yourself and, you know, just focus on what you're actually doing.
Yeah, because working as an artist is, you're working all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that because you love it and you get excited, and time just disappears when you're working, and especially if you have a exhibition or a great project going on. But when you've been doing it for some years, it also starts getting, it's going to be a work. Mm-hmm.
Like a job.
Yeah, exactly. It started to become a job, and there's a lot of practical things in it. And I got two kids and a family, and we moved back and got a house.
How old are your
kids? 17 and 12. 16 and 12. Almost 17.
Well, I put down an application recently for Maxime, and I mixed up the date of his birth. Should be embarrassed about this, but I was just typing too fast, and then I put in.
We all do that.
But I know how old my kids are.
Yeah. And then suddenly, thanks, Jörg. then it becomes a job, a good job. I love it, but there's so many practical things and all that. And you have to.
You know what I hate about the most is, like, I have these office days.
I try to
separate it from, and then sometimes I have, especially when, you know, now with the show coming up, there's a lot of office days, of course, more than usual, or at least office hours.
But
other people who work in office wouldn't call.
But you also I'm working hard. You're working extremely hard.
Yeah, but thank you. It's how I am.
Yeah.
It would probably not work out for me differently. But anyway, so what I hate sometimes is that then I am in my studio and I work on the computer, and my plan was in the afternoon or so to start working on or continue on that painting, and then I cannot anymore because I know I have to go at 5 o'clock home, do the shopping, do groceries, do the cooking for the family, which I love, you know, I really love. So, and then I say, oh, it's just 2 hours. I don't even need to start.
Yeah.
I don't even need to start. And, and I think that sometimes is for me is a problem that I would love to do more. I would love to just, you know, stretch myself out in the morning or in the evening or whatever, and just go and work on the canvas or in the wood, in my case. But sometimes so many obstacles are in the way, and they're just pissing me off, and I get mad. I have to sometimes remind myself that this is also part of the job. Mm. Like that Instagram post that's lurking in the back of my head and say, well, I haven't posted in a week. I need to have all the photos, and then I'm totally relieved when I'm just going and I just dump 10 photos. I say, I have no time, but come to see us all at the LAN party. And I say, oh, that was easy, but it was nagging in the back of my mind that I have to do this office thing, you know, and where actually I forgot you were just in my tiny studio here in the house, and you saw the big work that I just finished at 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I was working almost 9 hours straight on that, and I didn't feel. I felt my legs in the morning, actually.
Yeah.
But I didn't because it's a big woodcut, you know. So it's also a lot of action required. but I totally enjoyed it, and that was probably like the best hours in my week. And I don't have bad weeks, you know. I have good weeks. I have same as you. We have good families. We're probably at an age, I don't know if you confirm that, where we're really good with our work.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's my feeling. I know what I'm doing is probably also not the right expression, but it's the feeling, you know. I know when I dedicate the time, it is time well spent.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know the feelings you got. I have the exact same way. Especially the frustration when you're getting into something. And I know the thing you're saying about, like, I can't start it now because I only have.
Yeah.
But also I have in the morning sometimes because I'm trying to work these very disciplined hours. Like I'm driving the youngest to school and getting back in the going to the studio, and then the time says 8, and now I have to. It just doesn't work. I have to sometimes go around for 2 hours in the studio before it hits. Like, and I know what I'm have to do, and then I'm punking myself, like you're saying, like with that what's it called, office hours. The thing. Maybe you should do that, but that's killing my my creativity. So, and then you get to work, and then you're getting totally into it, and then suddenly you have to pick up children again, and the day. But when I was younger, and I'm not that old.
How old are you? For may I ask?
Yeah, of course, 42.
42. Yeah. Okay.
I think I had more energy for working in the night hours. Mm. I always loved going into the studio after 8 or something, 9 in the evening. And then because then I have no, what's called, backstop. I can just work. Because when you're in the zone and you have something to do, because I think you work in some way a lot like me. You know, you have an idea about how where you want to go with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it can make changes or things can happen, but you have also, I have it the same way, and correct me if you're going totally abstract. I know you're doing with the colors and everything, but for me, I have always had an idea about a drawing or a painting. This is how I in some way wanted to, when I'm done with this, this is how I want to look, almost. So it can be a lot of craftsmanship when you're going into it. And that's great doing in the night.
Yeah, I don't work in the nights much more.
No, I did when before I did. I can't do it anymore. I'm tired.
Yeah, same. But I but also, you know, I mean, my whole life, but pretty early on, I started to wake up really early.
Yeah.
So, and I liked it. And especially here in the countryside, and you saw the bedroom I built with the window, the sun goes up there. So I'm now up here in the north, you know, the sun basically doesn't really set, you know, it gets from a really dark blue into a lighter blue. And then at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, this light, and then there's sun. And so I like getting up to that. And then it's tough in the evening to continue working. But this week I made the exception, and it was really nice. It was a very, very good feeling to do that again. But I don't want to sound like an old man talking about their job, because we're still putting in the hours, which is starting earlier. And with kids and with trying a lot of people probably have this romantic idea of artists' life is just all they have to do is paint. And I think at a certain stage in a career of an artist, it might be that you live like that and you can afford to live like that because you're young, you don't have children, you don't have responsibilities except yourself, you know, and that's fine. It's cool.
Yeah.
And we've been there. And, but also then you kind of have to rearrange your schedule, you know, finally you discover there are office hours that you have to take care of. I mean, when I decided to not do any exhibitions anymore with other artists with the Helium Cowboy thing, when Melvin was there, and I mean, Melvin actually mentioned in the last podcast that it's now 10 years ago, he did the first exhibition where he supported me, helping me. Yeah. So when he stepped in, I was so happy, you know, not to do that anymore. But there's still office hours.
Yeah.
There's still so much also. So I think to get all that under one roof in a day requires a certain mindset, because the work that I'm doing, you know, which is a set, is definitely not streamlined, but it's always broken up in phases. The first phase is actually, you know, sort of after I've built the wood stuff that I'm working on, but that's fine. It's just, you know, it's craftsmanship, and you don't really have to think about that. You know, it's easy. But then it's doing the painting, and that's a free process, which is doing my head in more often than not, because I have to develop the story in an abstract way that will work when I come to phase two, when I start the carving.
Yeah.
And when I start the carving, and I started the carving, that's basically where it all falls into place.
Yeah.
But depending on the size of the work, it's a process. Sometimes I'm disappointed with the smaller work when I finish it so quickly.
It's hard making smaller work.
Yeah. Because I think I've left something out. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
With a big work, God, you practically live with that beast for a month or two. That's nice. I enjoy that. I enjoy large work more than small work.
Yeah, I have it the same way. I just, right now, it's actually closing today. I have a solo exhibition in Denmark and in an old medicine, what's it called? Factory, what's
called? Make pharmacy?
Yeah, where you keep all the
pharmaceuticals, or
yeah, and it's an insane room. It's so cool.
Yeah,
And there I have these huge walls.
In Omro, yeah.
First time exhibition in my hometown.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was a lot of work. I had a curator and an art history, something that took over a lot of it.
They did the office hours for you.
Yeah, thanks to them. But now I had these huge walls. I had the opportunity to make bigger works. And it takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But authority in bigger work, the way that it looks back at you, for me, is one of the coolest thing about working on bigger. I think to make a small work and make it a small painting and make it really work, for me, that's hard.
Mm.
Because it have to have the same authority as the big ones.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sometimes it's it's very difficult, and so I really I appreciate larger work more.
I always enjoy making large large works. Yeah, if we're gonna make a sun. It's just more cool if it's a meter wide. and the smaller Oreo size.
Yeah, I like to get lost in the work as well, and it's much better when you work in large scale. But of course, it's a process, you know. Yeah. I started with the wood. Work with the paintings, with the carving.
Do you ever have these feelings, periods or these times when you're where you're have the need to finish up things fast? Go to the studio. I like making. I know you made a lot of drawings. Some years ago, and that whole feeling about like taking a pen or some paint or anything, just make it. This is how what I want is a dun dun dun, and then cool, I have an artwork.
Yeah, it's part of my therapy, actually.
Because I also love that.
Yeah, I find it funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about the artwork that I would show at the LAN party. And last year I had because I was showing my work, you know, like over years, you know, so there are some older works and stuff, but also the drawings that were just published in the book, 500 pieces. So I just had them. They were still framed from the last exhibition. We just put them up. And then now I was thinking, yeah, maybe I put two or three drawings in the show as well. And I figured out that I haven't been drawing anything for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I apparently I didn't really miss that because I had so much else to do. But then I thought there's probably something in my healing process that's missing. It's exactly these drawings. But the drawings that I've actually did since then are shit.
That's funny.
I did a drawing here and I kind of liked it. I was drawing these trees and that's more meditation. The other ones are on the point and they're just like done in 5 minutes and they have a punchline. But these trees are just... And they're super unsuccessful. Nobody buys the trees, but I couldn't care less. It's just... some people buy the trees, but it's... You know, it's more for me, as I said, it's a therapeutical work. But then I was drawing here in the house and it was sometime, you know, when it was raining outside and one of the cats comes in and Mukka, the white cat, she tends to jump on my desk and jump on me on my lap. And so she jumps on the drawing and leaves her footprints there.
Yeah.
And that I kind of liked. So I let it dry. And the next day I drew another tree and Mukka comes in. I said, come here. And I grab it and put it on the drawing. So just to pretend that she's always walking over my work. Yeah. So, and they're also shit. I made three drawings like that. And they're just, I mean, they're not shit. Of course, other people will probably like them. But I was just like, sometimes, so there was, it's kind of a blockage towards these drawings right now with me. And that's also part of the process of as an artist. I don't know, you probably have things that they just don't work anymore. You've been done a book with 500 drawings and now the drawings don't work anymore right now.
You know, when I started showing at Helium and you guys saw some of my stuff at that time, I was drawing mostly ink drawings. And for me, I only did drawings almost.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was the way it was at that time, because it was simple. It was ink. I couldn't delete it. I couldn't do anything. But for me, like having this thought, just going on it, making it, finishing it, and then afterwards saying, oh shit, I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. I love that process. Now I'm painting again. I started painting when I started making art, went over to drawing, did both. But I'm also a place right now where I'm not using ink anymore. Now I'm just painting, discovering shapes and everything around the geometric shapes. But I forced myself to draw last week, and I couldn't find a story. I was like, normally I always have something shitty to say, or
yeah,
or do something, but I couldn't find the story.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. I'm
yeah,
just, yeah, that's.
And then my daughter pushed a vase or something. It fell down from the table, and I had this. She's starting drawing with oil pastels.
Oh, nice.
And love it. And we had this talk about.
She's how old again? You know,
12, 17, 12.
16.
8.
12.
And then we had
for drawing.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And then we have to talk about, because I'm making this still life, still living.
Yeah.
About the vase, and what is it? Is it just about drawing something beautiful, or could you identify by saying, okay, I am the vase or the flower or anything, and trying to put yourself on the table and how you're feeling? And if you are falling down from the table, you can do it. And actually, just that little thing started up something drawing in me,
mm-hmm.
And I start drawing again.
Okay.
So sometimes a cat or anything. I'm sorry that it went shitty for you. I know you're.
Probably the cat likes the drawing.
The thing is, I actually know you're good at drawing, so I'm sure you're gonna find it.
Yeah, but they're meaningless. You know, they're totally meaningless. They can stay on the paper that I drew them on, or they can, you know, but they don't have to be. I don't have to show them.
No, but you not always have to do that.
No, of course, of course.
Yeah,
no.
Sometimes you can just make a drawing. I have thousands of drawings laying around. Sometimes I actually find something and say, "You actually made that?" And I was like, "Hey, that was actually pretty good, you know." But it's never been shown. It's never been. But I think sometimes it's good just making something to finish something. And you're working the big woodcut you're doing right now. It takes hours.
Months.
Yeah. And you need to finish something.
Yeah.
I need to finish something,
totally,
or I'm getting almost insane.
Yeah, but that's what I like about the sculptures. It's a process that it's time consuming, but it's a chainsaw. It also goes pretty fast. And you have a certain shape that I want. This is shape I want to reach. And then I just make the shape better.
There's something there's expressionistic in it.
Yeah, and then it's gone. But they're not as. I'm totally attached to these guys. I would take them on vacation. You know, if I had to go somewhere, it's too many by now, and they're too heavy, you know, for the load. But they're just like they're like people, you know. So especially because they're three dimensional, but. But they're also, at least for now, right now, they're also, they come to me. They're easy to make. The wood, I'd look at the wood and then the tree trunk basically tells me what needs to be cut off. It's like being at a hairdresser and he looks at your head and says, no, you can't wear that hairdresser that you've been wearing for the last 20 years. We need to change it, you know? So I changed that.
Yeah.
But, so now I'm a hairdresser anyway. But I know it's always a process, but I wanted to have this, one thing that I'm really curious about. We just mentioned that when we met, you were doing the ink drawings and then you started a new series. And right now you're working again, like on a new series. What is it? Is it? And we also mentioned storytelling before.
Yeah.
What kind of story are you telling now? And with the work that you're producing currently, because they are just, I mean, again, different to the red and black ink drawings and, you know.
As I told, I was like, I've been drawing for so many years. And the thing when you're drawing, and you know that, is that everything is made in shapes.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it in some weird way, you can always see shapes and something. And I've always seen myself, especially in my drawings, as a storyteller, and was inspired about that whole one-line comic culture.
Ligne claire.
The folk art stuff from the US and all that.
Okay. So Robert Crumb.
Exactly. And Gary McGee and that. Yeah, there's. I don't hope they're listening to this one, but they're getting old now. Also,
not interested in podcasting.
Yeah, you must have known some of that San Francisco scene thing. I was very inspired about that. got me into the drawing fingers, and now I'm working in shapes, and I gave myself this challenge that trying to tell stories with shapes, like trying how much can you like just bring it down to simple shapes to and still try to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And then I tried that. That was extremely difficult. But I discovered doing them, started extremely simple, got more detailed. Oh, I need to get back to the simple. That was the whole point about it. And started seeing that you can actually control, what's it called? You can control feelings like being calm and bringing back maybe memories and emotions and all that just by placing shapes in a different way. So I started working pretty intensive about the whole way to place these shapes, and started seeing, okay, this can actually, if you only take three colors, make a window in a simple shape, make some blue that indicates water, you take a sun, is it going up, is it going down, which way is it going, and place something. It could be a cigarette, it could be a small ship, it could be something. And suddenly, the whole storytelling was working because of that little ship. Mm-hmm. It's just a gray rectangle, but it's suddenly, the whole picture just said poof because of that. And that way of like going into it, trying to figure out how can I tell a story, it inspired me. It's like it totally exploded for me that you can like take it down to that simple and not still not just give a story. I was more like before, I want to say that or that or that, I have an opinion or something. But this is, people are drawn into it, like saying, why is there a cigarette? There's only one. There's only this whole picture. There's only, you know, I actually used to be a smoker. They're saying, my dad is, and then it starts coming this whole thing and looking out. There's only water. Why is there? Oh, it reminds me, I once like moved from this house, and I was standing looking out of the window, and I was like, wow, it's really simple, this one, but it turned into a lot of things in these exhibitions, and that made me curious.
Yeah, but that's I think that's a fascination for this new series. And I liked the drawings before as well. We got one up here, you know, the pretty brutal one. Yeah. Actually. I mean, not at the moment, but it will.
Is that the one with the what is it called?
The chicken and the gun. Which is actually used for cows, I think, right?
It's used to killing cows. Now they're using it for killing chickens.
But that's a story that unfolds. And so basically you stay true to that by placing, you know, because that is a story that we haven't seen yet, but, you know, and we don't really need to be part of it.
No.
But that's pretty, you know, obvious. But then now you place just a tiny little bit and you just think about it. Because when I saw these new works first, like the window frame with... which was nailed, you know, closed. Yeah. You know, I think there's so simplistic, but there's so much to that unfolds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, are you a patient man?
No.
No.
And it depends.
I'm looking really forward to the reaction of the people to these works here. Yeah, I'm
looking forward showing them.
Yeah, I think we have a really nice group of artists together to make it really exciting to look at the different angles of what contemporary art can actually.
I'm looking so much for it. It's a lot of brilliant.
So, final question, do you still enjoy cooking?
Yeah. Love cooking.
Are you the main chef in the house?
Yes.
Okay.
I've been with my wife since she was 19. Yeah. I was 18.
Yeah, sweet.
So, I've been cooking since.
So, she never had to
has. Right. Love it.
Excellent. Rasmus, we're not going to be cooking. We're just making a barbecue, which is fairly simple. No salads. Although my friends are bringing salad over, but we're just doing meat and fish and some bread.
Sounds great.
It's easy, right?
Looking forward.
Yeah. thanks for coming up here. Thanks for bringing your work. Thanks for spending time with me talking. I think we've gotten a little bit slow over the time because it's super hot.
Yeah, I was actually thinking because my head is like, normally I think I'm faster.
Yeah.
But everything is like just slowing down. I think, how hot was it earlier?
I don't know. I just felt really hot. All right.
Okay.
Cosmos,
sweet.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to me. And I will see your work and you at the LAN party.
Yeah. Cool. Here.